So I'm here with Hillary Weber and Dan Weber. Hillary will be speaking today at today's Tuesday devotional. And we have him here, flew all the way from Texas. And so we got some questions for you. We're going to do an awesome interview with you. So I saw that you got your law degree from Texas A&M.
I did.
So that's cool.
Yeah.
And I saw that you've been working as an online professor for BYU, Idaho.
Yeah, since 2011.
Okay. Yep. Cool. And I saw on there, it's cool, they send us these little bios that we see of the people that we interview. Mm-hmm. And it talked about how you've had the opportunity to be a mom and be part of the family while you're able to be an online professor. So do you want to talk a little bit about that experience?
Yeah, no, I'd love to. Yeah. So actually, Dan and I, we had a hard time having children, like 6 years. And so in that time period, he was very supportive because I said, okay, looks like I'm going to go get more education. If I go to law school, let's say I go to law school and then nothing happens from that, is that going to be okay with you? Meaning I'm going to be a stay-at-home mom. And of course, he was very supportive. So went to law school, never thought I'd make it out because we were always thinking kids were around the corner. Mm-hmm. And then it just, you know, kind of never happened. And so then I got my law degree, which was great, and I loved it. And then we had our twins, which was amazing too. And so then as I tried to figure out how to do something part-time in the home, because now I had these children that I had always wanted, but I also felt like I have this student debt that I kind of want to help chip away at. I was always looking and searching for things that I could do with my degree. And then 2009, I saw an email circuit with BYU Idaho online. And I thought, oh, that sounds perfect. I never thought I'd be an instructor or teacher, but I was like, that sounds perfect. I can do something and be at home with the kids and not have my time so divided. So fortunately, you know, BYU Idaho is so progressive in that area and it just kept growing and the opportunities were there. And for people like me, it was amazing.
That's so good that you had that opportunity. And yeah. I know there's, you know, we have online professors here and kind of sometimes it can be scary because you're scared you're not going to really get to know them or
correct
it might not be as
yes
you know. So I'm sure you've had that experience, but I saw in your talk, I had the opportunity to read your talk and see what you're speaking on today. You spoke about some of those people, the students that you have online, and the different cultures that they bring, which I thought was awesome. There's some cool stuff in there.
It's amazing how many different students go to BYU Idaho. Of course, on campus, I'm sure as well, you have variety. And I have about half and half. So online, we have about half who actually are on campus. And then the other half are around the world. And yeah, so we're talking China, South Korea, Russia, Ghana, Nigeria. It's been amazing to see that diversity of cultures in that sense and have their different perspectives in the discussion boards and online. It's been very amazing.
Going right along with that, I see that you used a website called Slido.
Yes.
And then you use this for devotional. I had never heard of it. I had to look it up.
Oh, okay,
I was like,
good.
Oh, okay, it's cool. You know, kind of platform, kind of figure out what it's for. You asked about, the question is, who is someone in your life that you find yourself disagreeing with the most? And I found that an interesting question to see, you know, kind of.
Yeah.
And it was funny, as I thought about that question.
Of how you would answer it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I actually thought of people that are really close to me. I didn't think of people that, you know, I thought of loved ones that I'm like, man, if I had a disagreement and where am I at?
So. I love that you brought that up because I have, of course, multiple choice, right? And you can only choose one for those that I don't know if you were able to go in and look and see with the multiple choice, but family members, right? So it's like parents, mom, dad, siblings, you know, others and stuff. And because I do think, you know, we might find ourselves, right, in that position where maybe, and sometimes that's a good thing, that it's the family, our family, who we disagree with the most. You know, because we have more opportunities to work on that. Because with friends, we can just say, okay, we're going to part ways. You know, I don't need this in my life. I don't have to do this. And so sometimes if that person is the family, I think that's actually a positive thing.
That's awesome. And what about you, Brother Weber? Have you guys had to see that opportunity as you've had a family and through marriage and stuff? I guess this could be good counsel for these young students who are trying to get married, who are married.
I always look to Hillary for good counsel. You know, I agree because, you know, Hillary and I, we both came from very similar backgrounds. And even having those similar backgrounds, we've talked about how, wow, there still are challenges and there's still things you need to work out, even though we both culturally came from Latter-day Saint backgrounds. And so that's one thing I'm very excited about with the devotional she's going to give. She gives some some helpful ways on how people who, if they have a common belief system, you truly can have healthy dialogue and come together and find the right ways to compromise, knowing that you've got a good foundation that you're building on. And that's what I think we found in our marriage.
So also in your talk, you talked about using a nanosecond
and
pluralism. I loved both of those words.
Good.
And I loved both of those definitions. I guess expound kind of why you chose.
Well, let me ask you a question if you don't mind.
Yeah, yeah.
So have, before reading this, had you heard of pluralism before?
No, not at all.
Okay. So I love that. I love that now we get to talk about something that possibly, 5 years ago, I didn't know either. And so I've been thinking about this for 5 years, right? And so over the 5 years, the different things that I've read, you kind of see now when you're aware of a topic, it's almost like you see it everywhere. And so once I became aware of this, I started seeing little pieces everywhere. And the nanosecond thing came from a Q&A that Elder Wickman gave along with then Elder Oaks. And he was trying to put this life into perspective. And the way he used, you know, this nanosecond of eternal existence, which is mortality. And that really, since that time of me reading that, that's been on my mind of the prism that I look at with all these different things. So with disagreement, pluralism, the things that we might fight about and thinking about, okay, does this, how long will this last after this life? Is this an issue in mortality? If it is an issue in mortality, then how do we work on it? And so that's kind of in a sense how those two ideas came to be. I don't know if that makes like much
yeah.
sense. Okay.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And so pluralism, which can be hard to say sometimes, fits into that discussion it's the idea that you have multiple cultures living and engaging. It's not enough to coexist and just live side by side, but you're actually engaging. And the way you can engage with pluralism is through this kind of shared moral framework, which is a little bit what Dan was kind of talking about when you have the same moral agreement with each other. And that allows you to be able to engage in relative peace. You're not going to agree. That doesn't mean you're going to come to the exact same conclusion, but you can learn how to appreciate that other perspective.
And what I loved is I saw in your address that it ties right along with the gospel and gospel values. And when you spoke about family history,
yes.
And you have some cool stories. I won't spoil those now.
Okay.
But I wanted to ask both of you, this question for both of you is, do you have other stories that you've seen from doing family history or doing family research that you've seen that encompass pluralism, I guess, if that makes sense?
On my side, on my mother's side, I was curious to find that I had these paternal relatives coming down as they went from West Virginia to Kansas to New Mexico to California. As they went through each of these different things, what I really loved, and I got a lot of my information from newspaper clippings, and it talked about how they were really involved in their community and how they were brought their skills of certain knowledge and started to open up and have little workshops of whatever it is that they were doing. And so that was their way of like being in the community and taking part of it. That, again, it didn't mean that it went their way. They agreed with the laws, and these weren't members of the church. But for me, I saw how much they reached out and were part of their community, and the community loved them. So when this one family left, I saw that their friends and family all got together in the community and threw them a going away party. This was like in 1912 and in Kansas. And so that's very endearing to see how much, you know, loved they were. And so that kind of stuck out to me of how can I reach out to the people around me and be more inclusive.
You know, to discuss just briefly how Hillary mentioned that my side of the family is a little more obvious, just to give a little flavor there. My father was born and raised in Rexburg, where my mom was born and raised in Zurich, Switzerland.
Oh, wow.
So very different backgrounds. Yeah. Her coming from Western Europe, cosmopolitan area, small town Rexburg. But they both had a shared love of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And so that's obviously in a family setting, but we've definitely been able to see how through both of our different family history, or just as Hillary has shared this topic, that outside of a family setting, you can still, if you have a shared belief, then you can compromise and come together. And you know, a lot of the family history that I've been able to discover has largely been because of what Hillary has uncovered. She's a great sleuth when it comes to family history. She's discovered, for example, a relative of mine that lived in Nauvoo the same time the Saints were there, but he was a non-member. And just understanding how he was able to not just live side by side, but hopefully have a healthy existence, healthy dialogue with people of a different faith, a different background, and not, once again, just having that side by side, but actually engaging with each other the way pluralism promises that you can.
Well, and the value of knowing family history is you will start to see certain talents and skills that run in your family. And when you notice those talents and skills, and everybody else comes with that, so you instinctively know you have this talent skill, you're going towards communications type of major, right? So your PR, that's tough. Really, for some people, it's tough. It's intimidating. You have to have a certain type of personality to do it. And it's not that we should all conform to be like you, but that's great. You can do it and you can be great at your amazing thing. Somebody else can have their skill and talent. And then when you combine those, it makes an amazing society because we're each playing these different parts. And the value in knowing family history is you're seeing that. Skills and talents, how that benefits the community, and how you want to promote that with everybody else around you. And so even though you might not agree on some of these other things, if you can at least agree enough to be in peace so that you can all benefit from each other's different skills and talents, that's what makes a really peaceful, amazing society like Nauvoo, even though people think of Nauvoo and go, well, it was all the same religion. Well, within the charter of their laws, it was promoted as any religion can come here and live. And then each person played a different part in that community. And so that town really ran very well. And it wasn't just because of religion. It was because they allowed each one to play a different role. And that's really essentially what we can have. Sometimes we just get distracted by the disagreements, by the differences, and the real passionate way we feel about the differences.
Right. See, I love that too, because you just kind of answered the last question I had for you guys. As you spoke on this awesome story about two Jehovah Witnesses that come and knock on your door. And so I serve my mission in England, and Jehovah Witnesses are very prominent there.
Okay.
And so when I was reading, when you told this story about these two young sisters who knock on your door, you use that as experience to share about kind of how to create a moral framework.
Yeah.
And I saw that you used that, and I love that, a moral framework. And I guess one of the last questions we wanted to ask you was, is there other examples or experiences, I guess for both of you, that you've ever had that help create that moral framework? Or I guess that you would say, this is how we need to help create this. I mean, you kind of already did answer that.
That's a good question, because that's actually some of the toughest, because I'm so familiar with the topic. It was actually harder to kind of come up with examples because I know what I'm talking about with a moral framework. But that story was meant to kind of help them see practical, right?
Yeah.
In everyday life. And so actually, as I was talking to Dan about this and coming up here, I was saying, okay, within our family, for family night, I saw something with our kids. One of our kids, they didn't like what happened with somebody else, and they resulted by saying a name, by calling this person a name, because they were just frustrated. And so I said, okay, you know, for our kind of moral framework that we all will agree to, is that when we're mad, we can talk about being mad. We can talk about what it is exactly we're mad about, but we cannot call someone else names. We can't do that personal attack, because it wasn't just about that personality of that person. They were mad at something physical that had happened. And so for us, the idea was, okay, how can we then show them that we're going to tie each other together, that, hey, it's a safe place. You can air your differences, and you'll feel safer telling your point of view and speaking your mind when you know you're not going to be personally attacked. Mm-hmm. And so that, in a sense, is actually what allows for the engagement of different ideas. You don't want to drive someone's thoughts underground because you're worried that you're going to be shamed. And so when you think about it, when you shame other people, that doesn't change anyone's mind. And so, in fact, it just drives them underground and you just never hear about it or don't know about it. So in our family, the communication style is more about, look, you can be mad, but you cannot make it personal and call that other person a name. And so that's kind of within our own family, the framework. That's kind of how it works. And it works because everybody agrees to it. That doesn't mean we're perfect and we'll always adhere to it, but everybody agrees to it. And then in that setting is when you feel more peaceful about talking about it.
And just explain how this can translate even into other areas. I've taken a cue from what I've learned as Hillary has prepared and researched this, that in my profession, one of the aspects of it is dealing with employee relations. And I've taken the tactic and learned from Hillary that if I can help people assume positive intent and whoever I'm dealing with and try to mediate or moderate, that if everyone can agree to that, that we're going to agree that everyone has a positive intent, we can keep it from being personal and we can actually come to an agreement or something that everyone comes together and agrees to. And I've seen that quite successful. So even in the professional realm, it doesn't have to be just family or religious. It can even be political, where if you can assume something as simple as positive intent or whatever moral framework you agree to, that you can actually come together.
Give them one of your recent examples with some of the people on your team when you say positive intent.
Well, I'll try to be careful with the details to protect my employer. But I just recently had two employees that were doing a little bit of a tit for tact, and it was obvious that there was a loss of trust. And so bringing them both in the same room and saying, everyone, we're just going to assume that you are both professional, you're both well thought of, we're going to take any mistrust out of the equation. If we can assume that you both trust each other and we can assume that you're both good employees, no one's going to get in trouble here, how can we agree on a path forward? And, you know, the first initial reactions are, well, she said this or he did that. Okay, we're moving past that. We're going to now talk about how do we move forward and assume that the person does not have anything personal or any hidden motives, that all motives here are pure. And we had a little bit of a cooling off period. The holidays worked really well for that. Then we came together after the holidays, and I was definitely able to see a difference. Now, this is still short term, and we're having to continue to check in and make sure that we maintain that very positive intent. But it's going well, and seeing that if we can at least agree on that one area that we're going to assume the other person has positive intentions, that gives us something to build on and to move forward with.
And if I could say one last thing,
yeah.
That's kind of important with the pluralism and a shared moral framework. It's a day-to-day thing. It's not like something that, like a building, you build the building and then you walk away from it. As you constructed it, the constructors are done and they then walk away. We're like, oh, we're finished. And then they move on to another building. It's one of those things where you work on it daily. And so like Dan was giving the example with the employees and says, okay, you know, we're still like working through it. Well, yeah, that's kind of exactly what it is. You can't really take it for granted and think that everything's all in good. But that's kind of one of those, it's just like the gospel using the atonement of Jesus Christ. We go weekly, right, to take the sacrament. That's and hopefully daily we're repenting, right, mm-hmm. in our prayers. So this shared framework is the same idea. It's a daily thing that we work on. And as we work on it daily, it builds and it's amazing. It can build to something really strong, but it's something that always has to be worked on.
This has been a gold mine of an interview. I honestly think
thank you.
This is information that I think will help students, and I think they'll really appreciate this devotional.
Thank you.
This devotional address. So this is Brother and Sister Weber. Hillary Weber will be our speaker today for the Tuesday devotional. And if you guys want to tune in onto our website, go on to BYU Idaho Radio, you can find the address and this interview. So thank you guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.